On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're investigating a time-slipping body in era-hopping murder mystery Bodies on Netflix, looking into homicides on the reservation in Dark Winds on Alibi, and, against my better judgment, talking Breeders once again as that show puts an end to its four-series run and my and Boyd's friendship in one fell swoop.
Oh, no, never.
I'm James Dyer, and welcome to what may end up being the last Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters. I am joined, one more time, by my soon-to-be ex-colleague, Boyd Hilton, and Kay Ribeiro, who's furious with me about the Pilot TV Google calendar, but that's a whole other thing that it's best not to get into right now. Are you both psyched for this particular episode, for round three on this particular issue?
Listen, I am, and I'm going to suggest I'm going to be the mediator. There's not going to be a falling out. We're gonna, like adults, we're going to have a very sensible, calm discussion about the show.
Should we give some context here? Because people are probably thinking, I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah,
so we reviewed season one of Breeders. Now, interestingly, there are two notable things about that episode. One was we recorded it without Terry. Terry was not there for that first episode when we reviewed the first episode of Breeders. I'm also wondering, was that one of the ones that we did live? Was it one of the ones that I live streamed on my phone? Do you remember I went through that period of just randomly live streaming episodes on my phone? I seem to recall Terry watching it from home, but I could be making that bit up. But so we did that, and I took against the show, and Boydie liked the show, and it got quite fraught in that particular first episode. So much so that I made some cuts to the one that went out, so it didn't seem quite so stressful for listeners to listen to. But leaning into that, so when it came back, when we reviewed, I think it was actually, I don't think we did with season two, I think we reviewed season three, I want to say, or series three, I should say, it's a British show.
Probably.
And we went back, and I made a whole big lol of it. I was like, oh, look, we had a big fight about the last time, and I said, and round two, and I made it all into a big old joke. I thought it was going to be fun. Mm-mm. Listeners, we didn't just have another fight. We had a fight that was even bigger than the first fight.
God.
And fell out massively to the point where Kay actually had to, like, literally, we had to go and we made up over a cup of tea afterwards because it was all a bit stressful. You were there. You witnessed it.
Yeah, I literally had no clue what was going on because at that time I was resolutely ignoring the podcast.
You were.
Refused to listen to it. And Boyd came back. And Boyd is one of the most level-headed, just very, like, consistent mood, you know, person ever.
Kay, so was Daenerys until season eight.
Spoiler, James.
Was she there?
Anyway, so he came back from the record and he just sort of looked sort of like shell-shocked and a bit broken. I was like, what is going on? And then he gave me a bridge version and then you walked over and I thought, oh, holy fuck. and then I tried to calm the situation down. Then tea always helps, a balm for the soul.
It does, so, it's true. A good cup of tea.
Yeah.
But if you were listening to the podcast, you probably wouldn't know because I cut both of those episodes so extremely that all of the arguing was out. Like, none of that made it into the broadcast version.
Was that because you were in the wrong?
Yeah, no,
and you kicked off.
Crucially.
Can you imagine him admitting that?
Especially in the second one, I was very much not. But I cut it back because I thought it would be very stressful to listen to.
Already dealing with this bullshit.
A few body blows there.
The first one was an interesting one because Terry really took against it for the same ones that I did, the early episode of the first season, but then got past that and got into it. And I think actually, you know, for me, it is very much those early ones when the kids are young, I found very difficult to watch. And I kind of, for me, it looked like, my whole thing was it felt like making comedy out of child abuse. But as the show goes on, it becomes a very different thing. And actually, when we reviewed, I think it was series three, I thought, oh, it's a much better show. And actually, what's good about this show, we've just gone into the review section.
Well, you have, yeah.
What's good about it at this point, I feel, is that early on, I possibly mistakenly aware that the show was condemning Martin Freeman's actions. I think what I saw at that time was a show that thought it was funny that he was swearing at his kids. Whereas actually, when you get into the later season, or possibly even later in that series, the show is clearly showing you this is a guy with anger management issues. You're not supposed to be on his side. You are supposed to be, like, slightly put out by his behaviour. So actually, you know, I mean, think we're all on the same page.
Duh.
So
yeah, it's not a documentary.
Yeah. Crucially. But suffice to say, Boyd and I's opinions were not... So there have been three great James and Boyd clashes on this podcast. Two have been Breeders.
Mm.
And the third was, referenced early in this podcast, the season eight Daenerys Bells episode, where there was relatively minor in the grand scheme of things.
That was
but
fine.
It got a little testy, I seem to recall, in that particular one.
The thing is about these disagreements, right, is...
Come on, Boydo.
I know you're going to deny this, but it's true. You're much more affected by them than I am, I have to say.
Your boy didn't give a fuck.
For example, I remember the famously you accused me of, famously.
I mean, I feel bad to laugh at that.
Yeah, it's fine. going off at the deep end was one of them. Was that the first one?
Yeah.
And for me, I was like, I don't think, I was just like, I'll keep arguing with you. It's called an argument. It's debate.
It's a heated debate.
Yeah. So I always found it weird that you edited them so much. Like, I think listeners can take it, a bit of, you know, heated debate, but you very much were affected by it, but I thought they were fun and entertaining.
Maybe I'm wrong. But when I listened back to it, I thought it was maybe quite a stressful listen, which is why I kind of... maybe I'm just super sensitive. Who knows?
I think for some people, when they watch it, they might find it
triggering. Mummy and Daddy are fighting.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think overall, as the impartial person, I didn't find it triggering, yeah. And I thought it was...
We were always arguing vigorously about the thing. We weren't doing anything personal. There was no personal attack on each other.
No, that would be a separate podcast.
Yeah.
We could do that another time.
That's only for subscribers. You have to pay extra for the personal attacks.
So I always think when you're arguing about a thing, like a work of art, essentially, without wanting to sound too...
Steady, it's not that good.
About it.
All right, now you sound pompous. Right.
Certainly a TV show. Then you can get as kind of vigorous about it as you want.
Let's save our vigor and vim for the actor review section where we are going to talk about
Breeders. I should also say that I am hosting the screening next week, of course for the possibly third or even fourth time in a row.
Yeah.
So I am, when it comes to hosting the panel for this show, I am Mr.
You
Breeders.
Are Team Breeders.
Team
yes.
Breeders, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. So just to make it, you know, clear,
you're always transparent,
inherently biased.
Well, on that biased note, let's talk about what we've been watching. Kay, what have you been watching this week?
Okay, two of them might be triggering for you, James.
I'm sure they will.
They're reality, they involve the Kardashians. So I've watched The House of Kardashian, which is on Sky Documentaries, and I've also started watching the new season. Now, the new season of The Kardashians, Boydo, episode 3 or 4. Kim takes her son to Arsenal. Did you know this?
Well, I knew that she did take her son to Arsenal because it was quite...
It features heavily in the episode.
It was famous at the time of fame. And that match...
They lost.
Which match was it again? It was a big one, wasn't it? Was it Spurs?
I don't think they actually said who they were playing, but I know they lost at the last minute.
I remember everyone going from mildly funny that Kim Kardashian's there with their kids. And they I tell you one clever thing they did was they... gave them shirts, they wore shirts, Arsenal shirts, but with the names on the back, but the names were of the women's team rather than the men's team, which was quite a cunning thing to do. So everyone was aware of it and people were very much like, oh, you know, we don't want to...
Dismissive.
We're a bit dismissive, especially when we didn't win. Anyway, yes. It must be interesting to see from behind the scenes.
I think you'll find it interesting because, so one of the players, whose name I can't remember, goes up to see them afterwards and also...
Describe him.
I mean, I can't. He plays football. Okay. But... Saka then did also do a bit of a FaceTime with the kids.
Yeah,
so that was very sweet.
Nice.
So yeah, you'd like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, The House of Kardashian is really interesting because, stop blinking at me, James. For anyone who is fascinated by that family, because it's got...
And doesn't have access to any other television programs, presumably.
Come on, don't be a dick so early on.
I mean, that's, you know...
That's a body blow.
Save it for Breeders. Save it for Breeders.
Yeah. We've already gone in off the deep end. We were clambering back of the other side.
I never said I wouldn't go personal.
Do you know what's going to happen? The edit of this is going to be on the Pilot TV podcast this week, Pilot's out, and that's going to be it.
What a way to end. It documents like everything that's happened with the family, and crucially, it's got really great contributors. So Caitlyn Jenner's on there, family members, friends, and sort of explains how this, like, how Kris Jenner, first of all, was trying to get herself an affluent, rich husband. She did in Robert Kardashian, charts their relationship, the O.J. Simpson trial, the acrimonious divorce, the relationship with Bruce Jenner, blah, blah, blah. But it is fascinating for, like, even someone who, and I watch it regularly, I learn new things, James. I know most Pilot Plus listeners are like, come on, shut up. But yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now, if Kim Kardashian announced that her and the entire family were going to do an episode by episode Expanse watch along live broadcast, I still wouldn't fucking watch it.
What about if Kim Kardashian said she was going to review the pod?
Wait a minute.
A review.
The most
you'd be into it then.
Actually likely happening is that she gets cast in a show that you like. And are you saying you're going to boycott that show?
Oh, no, not at all.
Right.
Not at all.
Okay.
Like, if she's going to be an ad, it's fine.
I
have just no interest in annoying people's personal lives.
Oh, right. You know, of course.
It's why I don't ask how your weekends went. But, you know, it's...
It's unbelievable.
But like, it's like, I find the Kardashians like faintly irritating. Not enough that I hate them or anything, but I certainly wouldn't spend time watching them do their thing.
I've forgotten this. This could be a Beth situation where we've forgotten what she watched. But did you watch The People vs. O.J. Simpson? And that's genuinely fascinating about what the start of the whole thing. Mm. You know.
Well, this goes into it
right,
a lot,
yeah.
And how each, like, Robert Kardashian obviously took the side of his best friend O.J. Yeah. And she was best friends with Nicole. And
yeah, because you get fleeting glimpses. Robert Kardashian is a character in it, a major character in it, and played by David Schwimmer, I believe.
Yes.
So you get fleeting glimpses of the kids and everything, and which adds to the whole fascination. Mm. That is an absolute... I said it before and I'll say it again, but The People vs. O.J. Simpson is one of the greatest TV dramas of the last 10 years.
Even Beth might concede that Ryan Murphy show is worth watching.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, moving on. The Reckoning.
Yes.
So... Okay, I wanted to ask you a question about it, because, Boyd, you were very up on this when we talked about it.
Yeah.
Did the Q&A.
Yeah.
When our John Nugent saw it and reviewed it for Empire magazine, he was much cooler on it.
Oh, really?
And did not like it as much. Though he did like it, don't get me wrong, he didn't dislike it, but he was not quite as... Really? So, okay,
stars.
You've seen it now.
3 stars? 4 stars?
I think he gave it 3. Okay. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Was Nuge, like... Did he used to watch Jim or Fix and stuff? Like, was he a light, you know, as in...
I don't think he's old enough for that.
Yeah, that's the thing.
He's a youngster.
I think there is also an element of, if you grew up in that time and you knew, like, you know, you knew him from the TV shows and being in the press, then it's even more gripping and fascinating because you're seeing...
I think his criticism, if I remember from the Review, he was just like, I'm not sure what we gain from, like, leaning into I think he called it the horror aspect of it. It's just the unpleasantness of it all and leaning into all that.
Well,
and I think his criticism, which I think, Boyd, you also mentioned, that it's not really a victim-focused show. It's kind of... showcasing or focused on this.
I mean, like, literally,
it's bookended. It's both. I mean, it is the victims, as Kay's about, are literally on screen.
Is that towards the end?
No, throughout. They bookend beginning each episode,
yes.
I think they may even pop up in the final episode. Have you watched the final episode?
Not yet.
In the middle of that, I think. What I did say was there are a couple of moments that I didn't like, which were almost stylistically like a horror film. Literally, like, trying to dramatise his predatory behaviour.
Yeah. Isn't he stalking a corridor at one point?
Right.
Yeah.
There's a bit of that.
What, is that when he's dressed as a jester?
No, I think that's in the... I'm talking about the final episode again. Yeah. And there's a couple of instances.
I've only seen the first two because they showed them on...
Right. There's definitely 3 and 4 get more kind of dramatic and horrendous. And they do... There's a couple of times where I thought it was a little bit misjudged the way... But that... So, yeah, I did... I think I might have mentioned that last week. So, as John... has gone full in on those moments.
He has,
I thought they were unfortunate, I have to say, But the rest of it,
Steve Coogan's performance...
Oh, astonishing.
...is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, he... And as you said last week, because I remember you were talking about it and you said that you very quickly forget it's Steve, and it's true. You just think you're watching Jimmy Savile, and it's obviously... I mean, it's completely blood-curdling and horrific and horrendous and all those things, but, I mean, I think it's...
I did used to watch Jim Will Fix It when I was a kid.
Yeah, same.
Did you write into him?
I never asked Jim to fix anything for me, I'm very pleased to say.
Mm. I remember, in my memory, because I did watched it as well, in my memory I always found him creepy. But I may be, you don't know whether you're...
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, he was always an absurd figure.
Yeah.
Whether or not I ever found him creepy,
I remember being aware that he was kind of bad, vulgar and kitschy and kind of, do you know what I mean? And kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
He was a ludicrous character, wasn't he?
Yeah.
A figure
and I remember finding that, because a lot of people, you know, completely embraced his weirdness as a character, almost like a kind of comedy character. But I didn't ever do that. I remember finding him a weird presence.
Well, because it was the cigars and the haircut and the jewellery and the tracksuit, all of it.
Yeah, exactly. So
I thought it was really fascinating the way that they explored his relationship with his mother. Mm. And she was... Who plays the mum again?
Sprung that on me.
Sorry.
Gemma Jones.
Yes.
Gemma Jones, yeah. As Agnes / the Duchess. Yeah. Who's always very good, yeah.
The idea that she, you know, never wanted him and she herself found him, you know, to have dark elements and... Yeah.
You won't watch it, will you, though?
Will I watch The Reckoning? I'm very interested to see it. I would have enjoyed reviewing it for this podcast. Whether it will fit into my watching schedule at this point now remains to be seen.
But. Oh, okay. I thought you'd be too distressed by it.
There's definitely a risk.
Warning.
There is a risk.
Oh,
there.
Dude. You're definitely, I mean, it's going to top you. Tip you over the edge.
Yeah, it's one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen.
Well, then I'm definitely not watching it.
Yeah, me too. James, it is honestly.
Okay, then I'm definitely not watching it. Yeah, you know my tolerance for that kind of stuff is extremely low.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, mine too.
Consider yourself warned.
Yeah. It's like Breeders pushed me over the edge.
Oh, God. So. Yeah. I mean, Jesus Christ. My one worry about Steve Coogan actually is because it's so controversial. And when I hosted, did I talk about it after I'd hosted the Q&A? Or had I was about to host it? I can't remember. It was this time last week.
It was. Yeah. I think it was before.
Yeah, because it was the longest Q&A I've ever hosted. It was an hour and a quarter.
Oh, wow.
Ooh,
that's hardcore.
It was epic.
Did you know it was going to be that going in?
No, I knew.
Were you panicking towards the end?
Well, I knew.
Did you have snacks and drinks?
7:45 was the start of the thing. And bear in mind, all the journalists who took part had been watched all 4 hours of the show. Oof. I mean, unless they cheated, but that's what.
4 hours of the show, then an hour and a quarter Q&A.
4 hours of the show, break in the middle, lunch break in the middle. Then at 7:45, the Q&A started effectively. And I knew that we had a cutoff of 9. And I never in a million years thought we'd come anywhere near it. But it got to the point where it was 9. And I was told if you go past 9, then literally the staff will have to walk out.
Yeah.
Because it's the BBC radio theatre. It was the venue. But yeah, an hour and a quarter, the Q&A went off. And it got quite heated. Talking of,
tricky questions.
The tricky questions, yeah. So you know, I did my bit, and then I threw it open to and credit to the BBC, I think, because Charlotte Moore was there, who's the head of content at the BBC. She's the Uber, you know, the boss, the big boss, and she took part in the Q&A and answered all the questions that they wanted asked.
Because it's not just a reckoning for Savile, is it?
Right.
It is a reckoning
exactly.
for the BBC.
Exactly. So that and the big argument came, which got quite heated, when someone from the Mail,
of course,
and there seemed to be like three journalists from the Mail alone. I mean, it was weird.
That's hardly a surprise.
I know. This guy from the Mail said that you know, there was this Newsnight investigation into Jimmy Savile that was scrapped, and this person said they should have dramatised that within the show. Instead, so the show ends with, the series rather, ends with a card, you know, on-screen note about what happened to him. And it said in that, there was a Newsnight investigation which was shelved, controversial. I haven't got the wording or whatever. The guy, the main guy whose book ends the whole thing, his book was published, etc. But, so it did acknowledge this news, and it is really, really, it was outrageous that it was shelved, and the BBC had to, you know, it was a hugely embarrassing thing for the BBC. That they stopped the investigation into him. I thought it would have been weird to dramatise that. This is after he died, remember? So, because the story is basically his life and his crimes and how it affected his victims and survivors. To then have a bit of dramatisation of essentially a subsequent media scandal, do you know what I mean? I thought would have been odd, but it ended up being a bit of a Barney between this guy from the Mail about this point who would not let it go. And to credit to the producer, Jeff Pope was the producer, Neil Mackay the writer, they just engaged in this conversation / argument about it for quite extensively. And not only that, when it finished at 9 and I had to throw them all out because the staff were about to leave, Jeff Pope carried on talking to these people, like a handful of people from the papers afterwards, almost like a subsequent sub-press conference with them. I got to hand it to him. He dealt with, again, like answering all of their points.
I think it's important.
Yeah.
As a veteran Q&A hole.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel that you need to jump in when things like that happen to try and throw yourself in front of the bullet, as it were?
Yeah, sometimes. But I think in this case, I thought I very much mustn't, because the whole point was to give all of the press their time for their questions and to do what they say, what they want to say. It's not up to me to cut them short or to, you know, cut short the discussion, really. And we discussed that beforehand, you know, with the panel. Like, they were like, no, you don't have to... step in,
yeah.
You know, just let
they can
it go.
Benefit so, themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And Steve Coogan, to be fair, was very, you know, because he's already got a heavy animus with the tabloids anyway. He hates the Mail, you know, everyone knows.
I don't think he's on his own there.
No,
yeah.
Indeed. So it was, and he never normally would even agree to be interviewed by them or even have them at his, you know, a screening or whatever, but he was there and again, he answered all their questions, etc. So it was a fascinating thing to be part of, yeah. It was quite incredible.
And wait, just last thing.
Oh.
No, I haven't finished.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely
okay.
Have not. Because I had to I had to watch something a bit, you know, obviously frothier and cheery after watching The Reckoning. So I finished Virgin River and I was kind of lukewarm when I first watched
it. It's the last series.
I don't think it is.
Is it not? So I've just made that up. Okay, carry on.
Maybe it is now.
If James had his way.
Yeah.
When I watched the first two episodes, I wasn't completely bowled over, but actually I got really into it, and I think, you know, I was a bit of a sucker for the cutesy cheesy ending, and also the teaser for the holiday special, which is two eps, which are dropping on the 30th of November, I think, was really good, and I have theories, so yeah.
I bet you do.
And that's it, I'm done.
Boydie,
hello. just to really get your goat, what's the word phrase I'm looking for? Yeah, to provoke you to know. Genuinely, last night I got all these messages on Twitter. Well, I was at a screening of a film, which was a really weird film with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, the one where he's in everyone's dreams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That is fucking freaky. So I was recovering from that. And as I was, I got all these messages on Twitter from listeners to this podcast saying American Horror Stories arrived on Disney Plus. Because remember I was saying the other week
how
they never announce it in advance now. It just
with actual
arrives.
Kim Kardashian.
With actual Kim Kardashian. So I watched.
James Does she get horribly murdered? Because if so, you might have me on board.
Spoiler alert, no. Well, in the first episode, she doesn't get horribly murdered.
Give it time.
I'll give it time. I will listen to warning. You may find this following sentence distressing. This is a quote. This is her first line in the show. So plays, the setup is, it's American Horror Story Delicate is the name of it. It's adapted from a novel.
Taylor Swift song.
There you go. And the main character is an actress. It's a kind of young star who's getting more and more famous, played by Emma Roberts. And she's getting IVF. And it's a kind of like a very, it's all about, it's kind of like a body horror-y women dealing with IVF. And it's kind of like Dead Ringers. Remember the Dead Ringers that we reviewed earlier this year? It's got a lot of similar themes to that. So that's the kind of ballpark area we're looking at. And Emma Roberts is the lead role. Matt Suchere, is that how you pronounce his name?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, as her husband. And Kim Kardashian plays her publicist. And her first line, I kid you not, in this show is, "Tell her to suck my clit."
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I mean, that's a strong opening.
It's a strong opening. And I have to say, I'd read reviews that said she was fine. Reviews varied from saying she's fine to she's really good. And I think she's really good.
Really?
Like, yeah. It's, you remember how Lady Gaga's acting career pretty much started, she was in American Horror Story, almost like five.
Hotel.
Four, yeah, which was like three or four or five seasons ago. She hadn't done much acting, I don't think, before then. She then ended up being in A Star Is Born, of course, which she was really good. Mm. Oscar nominated? Was she Oscar nominated?
I think so. I
can't remember. Anyway, I didn't think she was great in American Horror Story, I have to say. I thought she was a bit kind of...
Gaga.
Yeah. She was a bit stilted, I thought, in that. But Kim Kardashian is totally natural in this. And it's kind of a good role for her because she is playing an over-the-top Hollywood publicist. And obviously, half her life is dealing with her own over-the-top Hollywood publicist.
Kris Jenner.
Yeah, and other over-the-top Hollywood publicists. So it's not like a... It's not a difficult role. But it's actually... Considering this show loves stunt casting, and Ryan Murphy in particular loves camp, over-the-top everything, including in casting terms, it kind of totally works within the context of the history of the show. James is literally nodding off. It's a glassy.
I've gone full Frears.
It's gone full Frears. Stephen Frears famously fell asleep, listeners, while I was interviewing him on stage at BAFTA. Anyway, so she's really good, James Kim Kardashian. More importantly, I like this story.
I think.
Now, it's interesting because last year's American Horror Story was the gayest one ever. It was the gay. It's all about gay men. Do you remember, like, the serial killer of gay men in 80s New York? And Russell Tovey was in it. Russell Tovey was the lead in that, effectively. He's the detective, if you remember. It was like very much focused on the men. There were a couple of, the Billy Lord had a role, but, you know, it was a bit like, how can we shoehorn women into this story that's completely about a bunch of gay men in New York in the 80s? This time it's very much about women. So that's interesting that he's kind of gone down this route. And it's the first time an American Horror Story has been based on an existing novel. It was a hit novel that came out a couple of years ago, I think. And the whole tone of it is less, it's less over the top. You're staring into space again. It's really disconcerting. What are you looking at?
No, do you know what it is?
What is
he's
it?
Asleep with his eyes open.
Is that what it is? Are you that tired? Have a late night.
Actually did have a late night, and I am very, very tired.
What were you
and
doing?
After
were you,
this like, podcast, playing... I'm watching Killers of the Flower Moon, which is 3.5 hours long.
I was going to say,
you know, he's got really red eyes.
Yeah. What were you doing last night then?
I was watching stuff for this podcast.
Okay.
I had to watch all the shows last night.
Anyway,
until 3 o'clock in the morning.
Being that boring because he's
no, you're not. No, I'm finding this fascinating.
Thanks for your support. Anyway, I thought this was a very strong opening to this series of American Horror Story. Less overtly horror-y. There's like a couple of... She's seeing things. It's like Rosemary's Baby meets Dead Ringers meets other stuff.
Could I handle it?
I think so. At the moment, it's more disturbing than... It's not violent yet. I don't know. I've only seen the first episode. They're doing it weekly, slightly annoyingly, on Disney Plus. So, but it's also got a bit of a Brian De Palma quality to it, a bit of a kind of Dress to Kill, so the way it's shot and the director or starter, which I love. I love De Palma. So I'm very much enjoying it, and it has got Kim Kardashian, and it's working. So that's the bottom line. American Horror Story Delicate has launched, everyone.
Excellent.
Wake up, James. It's your turn.
No, also the other thing that's been throwing me off. Look up there. See, I keep turn. There's a TV screen. Listeners, there are three TV screens in the office. One of them has a clock. The other one, weirdly, has BBC News all the time. And the third one...
You're always on that, don't you realise?
Well, no, but see, the thing is, the third one has... There are cameras around the studio, and depending on who's talking, they flip between the various ones. But all of the cameras are broken except one, which is the one on my face. So the screen is essentially off. But then every few minutes... My face will just flash up on the screen for like 2 seconds and then go away, and it's really distracting.
Oh, that explains it, because you were really distracted by it. I was like, what's he looking at?
You say distracted. He's just been gazing at his own reflection.
That's that too. So,
Then it goes off.
Yeah, see, look, it goes. Now the screen is off, and I'm back. There I am. I'm on the screen again. It's very weird. It's very, very weird. But anyway.
What have you been watching? Myself on the screen in the studio.
I've been watching myself flickering on a screen in the studio. I have been watching other things. Mainly, though, I will say the Wheel of Time finale did air, and it was everything I dreamed it would be. It was magnificent. And you'll be excited to know, so seized was I by how the genius of it that I sat down for a mammoth, frankly, when we recorded, it was about an hour and a half conversation with Helen, her brother Colm. Yes, Helen's brother is on the podcast, and fantasy author C.L. Clarke, who is a big fan of The Wheel of Time.
I'm fascinated by Helen's brother being on the podcast. So, Colm O'Hara.
Colm O'Hara, yes.
What does he do?
I genuinely don't know. He might be a teacher. I can't remember.
I make a joke of the fact that neither of us are ever invited to these things, which is fine because I didn't.
And now just random relatives and people.
Brothers. Yeah, I'll get my brother in, Phil.
Yeah, I know Kay was very keen to come on discuss the Wheel of Time, but
really good. I'm gonna listen now.
Oh, he's a massive Wheel of Time head. Like Helen is a Wheel of Time head, but Colm is on a whole other level.
Wow,
like he knows everything about these books. Okay. And then Sheree, C.L. Clarke, she writes her own fantasy novels, but she's a big fan of Robert Jordan as well. And she was at, you know, me and Helen did that Q&A live event thing for Wheel of Time. Yeah, so she came along to that. And that was, I mean, one of the women in the audience there literally had the map of the world of Wheel of Time tattooed on her arm. So, you know, it was hardcore.
All I'm going to say, right, is the difference between you from 5 seconds ago when you were virtually, like literally, I thought we'd have to get the paddles out. I'm going to have to try and resuscitate him. And now he's talking so fast and excitedly. It's hard
Wheel
to keep
of Time.
Up.
Yeah. I have seized Sidene. That's what's happened there. It was a great finale. We had a great old chat about it. I'm going to condense it down. I'm not going to put it out at an hour and a half long. And I'm still hoping we're going to get showrunner Rafe Judkins. I have put out a request, but I have not heard back. So I'm waiting to see if we get him. And if we do, that will go in as part of it. If not, then you'll just get us unfiltered and
what's
nerding out.
Again?
Rafe Judkins.
Rafe Judkins is a good name.
Don't make fun of Rafe Judkins.
Rafe Judkins is a good name.
So that was that. And the other thing I did was I watched all of Interview with the Vampire. So I have now finished Interview. And so much so that I wrote a review for the Empire website and gave it a full 5 stars.
Controversial.
Yeah. Well, I figured...
I mean, 1 minute we've got Nick giving Frasier 4.
That was it. I figured if Frasier's getting 4, then Interview with the Vampire's getting fucking 5. So
God.
Nick raised the bar there. Yeah. So, you know, I had no choice. Okay. But I loved it. And also, you know, if you're a fan of Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicles, there are some curveballs here. There are some big surprises. I was properly floored by some of the things that happened in this season. I absolutely loved it. Bailey Bass, who plays Claudia, and she doesn't come into halfway through, but she's really kicks it up a notch. But then crucially, she's not back for season 2. That role has been recast. I'm not sure why. They never really said why. She said due to a variety of reasons, she's not able to come back for the second season. So that role's been recast, which is a shame because she's really, really good in it. It's a 5-star TV show, people. Watch it.
I'm going to have to watch it now just to see whether you're correct or not.
You've got to watch it all the way
through
to the end.
Ridiculous.
Reasonably certain Kay's not going to, but you absolutely have to.
Okay. Right.
Great stuff. Interview with the Vampire then, all of which I believe is on iPlayer now.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. 100%. So fill your boots. Yeah. Your frilly Victorian boots. And that's what I've been watching. So, shall we move on to the postbag? Now, you will notice I did not share with you a question for this week's postbag.
No, you bloody well did not.
And that is entirely by design and not in any way because I've been really busy and didn't even have time to write a script for this week's episode. So what we're going to do is we're going to delve into the postbag and have a bit of a live triage, much like we do on Pilot Plus.
Why don't you scroll... And I'm going to say stop.
Oh, you want to do it like roulette?
Yeah, come on.
You want to do postbag roulette?
Like they do on this morning on the spin the wheel competition.
Oh, is it what they do?
Yeah.
Okay, they've copied my game.
All right, here we go. I'm scrolling.
Stop.
All right, we've stopped on one.
Go on.
It's from Alan Smith.
Hi, Alan.
Alan says,
Alan Smith, the former Arsenal footballer?
Yes.
Exactly who it is.
It's from former Arsenal footballer Alan Smith. And he says, Having just sobbed my way through the last 10 minutes of episode 6 of The Long Shadow and their use of Bridge Over Troubled Water, which will have an impact on me when I hear the song. Have you and your excellent colleagues, I guess he means you, but I can't imagine why, ever had your views on a song changed for good or bad due to its use in a TV programme?
Well, I mean, my love for Kate Bush and Running Up That Hill couldn't have been greater anyway, but it was definitely confirmed when it was used.
Didn't maybe change the way I felt about the song.
No.
It was a banger to begin with.
Do you know what? I get really excited when a song I love is used in a TV show, though. I think it's one of the most exciting things. Oh, film. You know, same thing. I get genuinely thrilled by that. And like, especially if it's used well, you know, like it was, and it's so kind of dominant and central. When they play a whole song, like from that I love, particularly, which is quite rare, usually with a montage or something. Like Ricky Gervais has very similar music taste to me. So he has a lot of Bowie and, you know, Cat Stevens and Neil Young and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, amazing. He's got like a 3-minute montage too. Yeah. And he's not had Kate Bush. He did this woman's work in Extras, which I loved. So I really get very excited about those needle drop things. And of course, I have now seen the David Fincher film with all the Smith songs
in. Oh, yes.
And I loved it.
Killer. Oh, my God. The worst soundtrack of the
year. That's film. Sorry. But yeah, it's got literal Smith songs all the way through. And it was such a treat. And I was so excited about it. Yes, for anyone with good musical taste. I hasn't really answered the question properly, but it doesn't change my view of songs I love, but I get very, very, very excited about it.
I think the association can be tricky. So Tom McRae's You Cut Her Hair, which is a song that I've always loved and was nominated for the Mercury Music Prize, I believe, when it came out in the early noughties. But that song, when it played in the English, and it was Rafe Spall's awful character making up awful lies about something that he had done that he was pinning on someone else. Weirdly, now whenever I hear it, he pops into my head, and that character is so awful and so horrible. He's a rapist. He's the nastiest person. So that association I could do without, quite frankly, because I really like that song.
Yeah.
So I guess that has a little bit. It's coloured that song a little bit for me. I mean, it was never, you know, a bop to begin with. Like, it was always quite morose and sort of downbeat.
Good, but now,
thank you. And now it feels a little bit like, you know, sullied. Sullied like Sidene, which has, of course, been tainted by the Dark One, Boydie.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever you say. Okay.
I don't think I've got an answer for this, because I've mentioned before Alleluia, but it hasn't changed my Leonard Cohen's Alleluia.
I mean, it's been in every TV show ever made. So.
Just Hallelujah, by the way. Sorry.
What did I say? Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. With an H.
Yeah. There's
Hallelujah.
People
what
say
did
Hallelujah.
I say Hallelujah?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Hallelujah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, I.
It's very
nitpicky
of me.
No, listen.
Yeah.
I'm here to be.
Don't
hymn-splain
to Kay.
No, also, I did know it's with an H, but I think I did say Hallelujah, right. I stand corrected. But as you say, it's used in everything. It was used most memorably for me when Marissa died in the OC, and it hasn't changed.
That may be the worst use of that song.
I know, but I was just, you know, it was an emotional time. So yeah, I don't have an actual.
And we're saying OC, so I'm a big Imogen Heap fan, and obviously Hide and Seek, which I think is the one where Trey gets killed. Doesn't Trey get killed to Hide and Seek? That's,
yeah, maybe.
I mean, yeah, but the OC did some, yeah.
What, you, no, stop.
What?
Are you going to diss the OC?
I'm not dissing the OC. Oh, okay. I'm just saying that the OC was massive melodrama, and they did. Yeah. They went all in with those hits on the OC. They did. They had all sorts. Did they have Coldplay in there as well? And they had like a band playing in the bait shop. They had all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So it was. But then you often get that. Like, you remember like Smallville used to set the agenda a little bit for pop songs? Kate's shaking her head here.
Oh, yeah.
As if she would ever watch
Superman.
Smallville.
No, I was shaking my head about something else.
But I would often do that. I would often like, listen, oh, that's a good song, and, you know, and listen to it.
Oh, yeah.
And not Dido. I'm talking about the songs that played during the actual show. Like Five for Fighting and stuff like that. Oh, that was Scrubs, actually. Scrubs did it too. Scrubs had lots of great songs in it.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Scrubs.
We've gone off the topic of the question, but I don't have an answer to it. So.
Go on, do more postbag roulette.
More? All right. Hang on. Let me pull up the digital postbag. All right. Go on.
Stop. Who is it?
Okay.
Make it a good one.
This comes from Cymac.
Ooh, hi, Cymac.
Cymac says, hi, James. I'm just back from Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando.
Oh, a man off your own heart.
Which I loved. And I also murdered Smells Like Teen Spirit in the Rising Star Karaoke Bar. God. And I believe you sang there on yourself on a trip, which I have done many times.
Is this your pseudonym?
No, it's not. I never sang Teen Spirit. I didn't know they had that there. No, Sweet Home Alabama was the one that I used to do on stage there. Mm. Having enjoyed the horror houses based on TV shows Chucky, Stranger Things, and The Last of Us, What TV shows would the pod like to see haunted houses based on? Look forward to the pod every week. I'll be honest with you. If they ever did a horror house based on the Kardashians, it would scare the shit out of me. So that's probably the one for me.
I mean, all of the Mike Flanagan.
I was going to say, yeah. So Haunting of Hill House, yeah. Midnight Mass, all of the above. Yeah. Yes.
Falling out of Russia. They could do one in that bloody club that they all go to.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. The naked from the waist down club. So yes. You have to go in with your tackle out. Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, that would be horrifying on so many levels, not least of all an HR one. But they could do a horror house based on The Haunting of Bly Manor, where you just have to watch The Haunting of Bly Manor. That would be
spiky.
That's it. Yeah. Kate, you're not a horror person.
No.
So what is a TV show that has really scared you? Not like traumatized you, like The Reckoning, but scared you, even though you don't watch horror.
I just don't watch it.
Ever?
No.
Just
why
don't
would
like
I,
it.
If I hate it and it scares me, why would I watch it?
No, that's fair. That's fair. I completely understand that.
Have you never watched any Scream or anything?
Freddy Krueger, no.
Have you ever watched a horror film of any kind?
No.
Are you serious?
How do you know if you don't like it if you've never seen one?
Yeah.
Because it, you see the trailer or whatever, and I'm like, that's...
It's not really the same.
Well...
Do you not think you should watch a horror film?
Fuck no. Why would I watch that?
It's Culture Exchange coming
That's it. The Haunting of Hill House is coming your way soon.
Because you might be entertained by it enough to negate the...
No, it'll get in my head and I'll go to sleep and I'll have nightmares or something.
Oh, do things like that affect you? Do they stop you sleeping?
No, actually, I do.
But nightmares are natural, aren't they?
What? Natural? Yeah, why would you want to have nightmares?
We don't want to, but, you know, dream / nightmare is just a part of the human mind, isn't it? God, we get very deep here. It just is. Do you know what I mean? You can have nightmares about, I don't know, a dog you met in the street.
Next on Dr. Boyd Hilton.
Yeah, as opposed to an actual horror film that you sat
through.
I generally
don't have nightmares.
Oh, okay.
Do you have a lot of nightmares?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean,
I'm a nightmare dressed like a daydream.
Mm, yeah, I have nightmares about.
I mean, I've had a few awake nightmares. Yeah.
I'm with you because I don't. I'm with you in that I won't watch stuff that I know will adversely affect me emotionally. If it's something that's going to traumatize me, I would just give it a wide berth because I don't want that living rent free in my head afterwards. But it's interesting that you've never. Actually, to the best of your knowledge,
actually, wait a minute.
No, here we go. The fairy is being reversed.
Seven. Not a horror film.
No.
Oh, but it's scary,
elements.
Isn't it?
It's unpleasant. Yeah.
I saw
it's
that
a thriller. It's
got a brilliant jolt shock moment, hasn't it?
Yeah.
When they discover that corpse.
Yeah. So the sloth
could
one.
Put you off. Yeah. Yeah. That could put you
and
off.
And I was at a sleepover. I wasn't even my own house.
How old were you?
Like I don't know. I can't, you know, a teen.
Oh, I think you were just 33. Yeah, okay. No, I mean that is a film that will fuck you up. It's true.
Yeah.
But it's not a horror film.
No.
That's interesting. No, I wonder if there is because there's different types of horror, right? As you can get really gory, nasty horror, which I don't particularly like. You get jump horror, which is a bit lazy, but can scare you on that kind of very sort of primal. It just makes you jump. Mm. Or there's the kind of slow burn psychological horror.
All of it is terrifying to me.
Well, I think the last one is the best because that's the stuff that really just gets in your head. Like it really freaks you out. So it's not like it doesn't really make you jump. It's not gory or horrible, but something in it just freaks you the fuck out. So The Omen is one of those. Mm. That is one where it just gives you the wiggins.
The wiggins?
Yeah. It gives you will wig 100%.
Isn't the phrase give you the willies?
No.
That's
a whole other type of film, Boydie.
No, steady. Oh, you've watched horror stuff for this podcast. I mean, you watched the Fall of the House of Usher, didn't you? Or were you away that week?
No, because do you remember my Netflix got hacked?
Oh, that's right. Oh, did it now? It's all becoming clear to me now. Netflix got hacked.
It did. No, Boydo is well aware of the cybercrime.
Have you recovered your Netflix at this point?
I have, yeah.
Okay, good. Good.
Netflix were very helpful, I have to say.
Unlike Instagram.
Oh, Instagram, they can go fuck themselves. Sorry, excuse my French.
Good to know. Yeah. But next week's the test, because for Pilot Plus we're doing The Burning Girls, which is pretty much out now horror, pretty much, kind of.
Scary. It's like it's a scary.
It's definitely
a
horror. Yeah. That's the genre. It is. It's kind of like a mix of the various genres, sub-genres you're talking about.
Yeah, but I'm
this has turned
week.
Into like Evolution of Horror podcast dubbed by my friend Mike Monson. But in other words, yes, you will have to watch it, Kay, is what I'm saying.
The Burning Girls. Judge of that.
Yeah, you have to watch it. And as with all such things, you have to watch it at midnight in a graveyard.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's how we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
Next live episode.
Yeah. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. Oh, so many ideas for spin-offs we can do on Pilot Plus.
Have you ever seen his so gleeful? Look at him.
Yeah, he's woken up again. It's a roller coaster.
Okay, I'm workshopping. I'm workshopping a title. Skate. KD Cat, I don't know, something like that. And every week on Pilot Plus, you have to sit down and watch progressively more horrifying horror things.
And obviously, Game of Thrones has only came about because of the pun.
That's right.
Yeah, of course.
All the best ideas come from puns, Boydie. This is a scientific fact. It's a scientific fact. Right, that's it for the postbag. If you would like your questions read out either on this podcast or on Pilot Plus, do send them to me on Instagram at James E. Dyer, and I will pick them up there. Shall we move on to the news? And there are a few things, sort of top-level things we should probably mention. For those of you who've heard us talk about this on the Empire podcast, all I can do is apologise. But we should mention that even though the writer's strike, the WGA strike, has been resolved, the SAG-AFTRA actor strike has very much not. In fact, negotiations have broken down once again because the AMPTPA, the studio's negotiating body, has essentially, well, if you're to believe the statement that was put out by SAG-AFTRA, they made an offer that was even worse than the one they made at the beginning of negotiations, which was soundly rejected.
They put out a very strongly worded.
They did, yes. They were message. Having none of that.
No.
So
it's really annoying.
I know though, it is. It's upsetting, but, you know, power to them. Mm. Fight the good fight and all that.
Yeah.
Hopefully the studios will and the networks will come to their senses. But that is an ongoing concern. Elsewise in the news.
Elsewhere?
Saying elsewhere. That's TV related. right. So Neverwhere in the news. There is the Daredevil stuff. Have you read about the Daredevil stuff?
No.
You haven't read about the Daredevil stuff? Well, Daredevil.
What do you refer?
Born Again, which is the MCU reincarnation of the Netflix Marvel.
Yeah.
Charlie Cox Daredevil series, has essentially died on its arse. It's being reimagined. The two writers, should we say, have parted ways with the series, and the whole thing is being retooled. It was kind of imagined as a legal procedural, and that's now been thrown out the window. There were questions about whether or not they should used to see him in his costume before the fourth episode. Basically, they decided the show wasn't working, and now they're completely rethinking it. But it's become like a broader, Hollywood Reporter wrote a really good piece on this, a broader investigation as to whether or not Marvel need to completely rethink the way they do TV shows, because by all accounts they do it the way they do films, where they kind of go into it a little bit half-cocked, shoot it all and then fix it all in post. But on the TV shows, with the longer runtime and the smaller budget, it's much harder to do that. So you get things like Ms. Marvel and Moon Knight, which start strong and then peter out. You get stuff like Secret Invasion, which was an absolute mess, you know, all of this stuff. So they're maybe looking at now bringing in showrunners as per the, I think, negotiations that that the WGA had recently. So there's going to be changes afoot at Marvel going forward, and not least of all with Daredevil Born Again, which is being rethought. There you go. That's some news for you.
Yeah, good news. Not as exciting.
By the way, both of you had my Kardashian face on when I was talking about that.
I know. So. I was trying my best to engage.
I mean, you weren't trying that hard.
That's very much not of interest at all. It's okay. We covered this a bit in Plus, but that comes out after this, doesn't it? Pilot Plus.
What are we know. What are we talking about?
The Seinfeld story.
The Seinfeld story. The Pilot Plus that we recorded yesterday is already out.
It's out.
People have already listened to it. I've already had feedback on it.
Yeah, someone actually tweeted us about it, yeah.
Oh, right, yeah. But for those unfortunate enough, it's confusing. For those not daring enough to subscribe to Pilot Plus or whatever.
And do it for the Wheel of Time spoiler special, which is incoming.
Well,
so.
Yeah, of course. Comes the very exciting but vague news that something is happening with the Seinfeld finale. Mm. The famous Seinfeld finale 25 years ago. It was heavily criticised. I won't go into all over it again because I did go into it in Pilot Plus. But basically, Jerry Seinfeld, on stage, it was asked about it when he was doing a Q&A, and he said something is happening with it. We don't know what it is. It's completely vague. My guess now, I didn't say this on Plus, this is the new development in my coverage of this very important story, is that it'll be something to do with the next series of Curb, I think. I think it'll be dealt with there.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, that's my guess. Because they've already dealt with the whole season was built around a Seinfeld reunion that Larry was creating. And I think this might be an extension of that somehow in the next season.
What are you basing this on?
I'm basing this on the fact that the next season's in the can of Curb. That, you know, it's the kind of thing that he would do in that show. And I can't work out what else would it be? Like, there's not a full Seinfeld reunion going on, as far as we're aware. That would
be a Christmas special?
Even that would be a bit weird. I think it just feels like the most likely thing is for it somehow to be addressed in full in Curb. But, you know, but I may be wrong. That is just literally my guess.
Okay. But none of that matters, Boydie, because Star Trek Prodigy, which was once cancelled, has been saved.
None of that matters because there's a Star Trek.
That's right. Paramount Plus had cancelled Star Trek Prodigy, the animated series, starring Kate Mulgrew and Ella Purnell, among others. But it's okay because Netflix have given it a new home. Star Trek Prodigy will return.
Series.
I don't watch it, but it's coming back and it's Star Trek and that's good news.
Yes. Exposed.
It's coming. I watched a bunch of episodes because I interviewed Kate Mulgrew and Ella Purnell for it.
Hmm.
So, but yeah, it's coming back and it's coming to Netflix. Hooray.
I've got a bit of news. I've got mixed feelings about this news, but I'm sure you'll realise as I read out this press release. So, Paramount Plus has unveiled the first look images and confirmed the ensemble cast for The Castaways, starring Sheridan Smith and Celine Buchans. So it's a five-part series, and it sees both of them play Laurie and Erin, who embark on the holiday of a lifetime in Fiji. After a huge fight, however, Erin never boards the island hopping flight to the resort, and the plane with Laurie on board never arrives at its destination. Now, did you hear the key word there? And this is a test to you guys to see if you're actually listening or zoned out.
Well, you said the key word. I mean, I don't know. It could be any of the key words.
Go on.
Sheridan?
Nope.
Okay. What's the key word then? I don't know.
James?
I mean, definitely.
Wait. What? Wasn't listening.
Yeah, I mean.
What were you saying?
Blatant.
Outrageous.
Blatant.
Isn't he such an outrageous?
Shocking.
Okay, well, for anyone who was actually listening, you would have heard that I said this is set in Fiji. And this was the show, guys, that we were hoping we would be invited to, yeah. So
right.
That we could go on a press trip to Fiji to interview Sheridan and Celine.
And crucially, all download the podcast while we're there, thus boosting our Fijian listenership.
And it just didn't happen.
No.
I mean, okay, sure, I didn't send an email. I didn't get Boydo, who people actually listen to send an email so that we could get invited. But still, I was hoping someone, by osmosis, and also if someone was listening, would think, you know what, these guys should come to Fiji with us. But yeah, it's happened now. It's in the can. So actually, I don't know if I can watch it.
I can get over it.
No, I don't know if I can. Oh, I feel so disappointed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I don't know. I'll see how I feel. But yeah, so that was a bit of gutting news, but also exciting for everyone else who isn't irrational like me.
We had a letter recently in the post bag from someone who's saying that we do not talk about Orphan Black anywhere near enough. And that maybe we should go back and rewatch that. I'm sure Kate never watched Orphan Black. Did you ever watch Orphan Black?
Yeah, I watched
the Channing Maslany show. Yeah, so yeah. I watched, I think, the whole of the first season of it. I didn't watch it all the way through
to the
end.
What's the connection between the two?
Yeah, was it set in Fiji?
Yes, it's secretly set in Fiji. No, because Orphan Black Echoes, which is the spin-off show from Orphan Black, had its first trailer with Kristen Ritter in it. I have not seen that trailer, so I can't tell you if it was any good or not. But I just thought, because we don't mention Orphan Black enough,
okay.
I am now mentioning Orphan Black, which was a very good show.
Yes.
And there's a spin-off coming, and there's a trailer for it that I haven't seen, but it's probably good.
Orphan Black was a good show. I'll go along with that. There was Crown news. I think this was among the most exciting news of the week, actually. The Crown date confirmation news. Did you see this, Kay?
Yeah, when, I can't remember though. When was it?
You can look at me as if I've made it up or something. I haven't invented it. It's official.
I'm smarting from the fact that no one was as annoyed about the Fiji press trip as I was.
Okay, well, I could feign annoyance if you want. But, The Crown, the final season, is going to go out in two parts, which is very much Netflix's style now.
Mm.
All the big shows, Stranger Things, Lupin, has recently arrived in two parts. Arrived in two parts of the last season. And The Crown, sure enough, the final season, part one, November 16th, part two, December 14th, part one... Season 6 covers events from 1997 through to 2005, broadly spanning the tenure of Tony Blair, who's played by Bertie Carvel, by the way.
Mm.
Part 1 sees Elizabeth Debicki reprise her role as Princess Diana alongside Dominic West as Prince Charles, and Imelda Staunton as the Queen, etc. And making their debuts are Rufus Camper as Prince William and Flynn Edwards as Prince Harry. The first four episodes are in Part 1, and they depict the relationship between Princess Diana and Dodi Fayed before the fatal car journey, which will be dramatised. Those are my words. Will be dramatised. I mean, they have filmed it. And then obviously because it's coming out in a matter of weeks. Then the final chapter, the final six episodes of part two, are about Prince William trying to integrate back into life at Eton in the wake of his mother's death, and the Queen celebrating her golden jubilee, and the marriage of Charles and Camilla, and William meeting Kate. And they've got different actors playing William and Harry for that final bit of the series.
I mean,
part two.
That makes sense because they're significantly older at that point. So
yeah, I know, but more characters have played those two, I think, in the whole of The Crown than any other thing. And so those, Ed McVeigh is playing Prince William and Luther Ford is playing Prince Harry and Meg Bellamy will be playing Kate Middleton. But I think the more it comes up to recent events, as it obviously is, the more kind of weird it's going to be watching the show, I think.
And this is the final season of The Crown?
The final season, two parts.
Get down with The Crown.
Mm-hmm. Get down with The Crown.
Right.
That is Partridge. Partridge is back.
Right. That's it for news. I'm calling news. Oh, is it not? Have you got more news?
No, it's fine. No,
did you have anything that I would care about?
Let me just check.
No, we got to call Time of Death on this. Come on.
That's it. Time of death on news.
Yeah, the news.
News is gone.
You're all right. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Let's move on to reviews. And let's begin with Dark Winds, I think, this particular week. So this is a psychological thriller, and it's based on the Tony Hillerman books, the Leap, Horn and Chi novel series. Now, this is an interesting one because this is the first season, which is airing on Alibi this week, but it has aired two seasons in the States. Mm. So it's come to us quite late indeed. So this is Graham Rowland has adapted the TV series. It went aired on AMC in the US. I was about to say how it went down in the US, but you know what? That would be a spoiler. I'm not going to say that. Boyd. I, you know what? I don't have a... Were you gone with the dark pump? Wind? I don't know. I've got nothing.
No.
I don't have anything for this.
Feeble.
Sorry.
It's interesting, yeah, because it's described as a psychological thriller in the official press information for this show, and you just said it was a psychological thriller.
Yes.
It doesn't come across to me as a psychological thriller.
I mean, it's like a detective mystery thing set in the 1970s, right? I didn't even say what it was about. It's a double murder on the reservation.
Yes.
Now, Zan McLarnon, who plays the Native American detective in this, also plays the Native American sheriff in Reservation Dogs, which we reviewed on Pilot Plus just yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's wild.
He's
very good at it. So I can see why he plays the same sort of character.
Very good. He's one of the best things about the show. It opens with this big action sequence, really, with helicopters.
With a helicopter!
Yeah, and like a
70s heist.
It was an audacious heist.
It was an audacious heist.
It opens with this big, huge action sequence, which, and then I was like, oh, hold on, I'm expecting a psychological thriller, and it's not a psychological thriller.
It's like it pivots from Heat to like this sort of like sleepy detective thing.
Yeah.
Not Heat the magazine, that would be weird.
That would be weird. And then, as you say, then the helicopter kind of goes over to where this where the Navajos are based, and it kind of beautiful landscape of the American West, and then it settles down to being a fairly, I would say, straightforward police procedural in which the aforementioned Zahn McLarnon is investigating with a new deputy, Jim Chi, played by Kiowa Gordon, and he's kind of also coming up against the feds, who are kind of, you know, obviously kind of the white feds, who are obviously kind of racist and not really taking the Native American investigation into these crimes seriously, and they seem not care as much about the crimes committed against the Native American people as much. So there's a kind of battle going on there between these two forces involved in this investigation, and there's also a kind of a domestic abuse subplot where this pregnant woman goes to a hospital appointment, and
I found that bit quite distressing because there's a woman who's translating for her.
Yeah, that's right,
and. She's not a good translator.
Well, she is also, it should point out, the sheriff's wife.
Yeah, she's the sheriff's wife, I was going to say. So the sheriff's wife then wants to get the sheriff, or at least the police, involved in investigating this woman who has marks on her arm that you'd think, from some kind of domestic abuse. So there's that storyline. But I'm sorry to get back to it, and I know it's just a press release, but it's just not a psychological thriller. So once I get over that point,
think you have to move on.
I am moving on now, officially. I've decided I'm moving on. It is a nicely shot. I mean, it makes good use of the spectacular landscapes of the setting, and it's well cast, and Zahn McLarnon particularly is really charismatic, and you know, he's an interesting detective figure.
Yeah.
And you can see why this is adapted from a series of novels, and you can see why they've done it, because it makes for interesting setting. It's, you know, it's a period piece as well to some extent, set in the 70s, and so I did like it. I did notice that I was reading up on it, as maybe you were, as you alluded to, James, in your introduction. And there have been criticisms in America of its depiction of the Navajo Nation.
Oh, really?
People saying that some of it was inaccurate. Apparently some of the language used and that was then subtitled.
That's unusual, because didn't they have an all like Native American? Didn't I read that they had the cast and crew?
It seems to be mostly. I'm not sure if the crew. I'm not sure if all the writers are.
Right. Wasn't that that was a Reservation Dogs thing?
Yeah, Reservation Dogs is definitely that. But I think this is less so.
No,
I think this is less so. I mean, I think the source material and obviously most of the cast, the key cast,
the writers' room is all
native. Right. Okay.
Definitely.
But still, it came under. I have no idea if those criticisms are valid, but it did. It did get a little bit of a rough ride in terms of its depiction of. It's quite. The domestic abuse storyline, because that's interesting. They've gone into that world. And I always think people, if you're set in a tight-knit community, that kind of activity might come across as critical of the community, but it's not meant to be, clearly. So I think it's valid to depict it completely. But as I say, it has had some criticisms. But I thought it was perfectly decent. The advancement in TV artistry and filmmaking, if you want to call it that, a few years ago, this would probably look like a fairly bog standard police procedural. And now they've got this spectacular opening with the helicopters. And even then, it settles down to being pretty stylish and eye-catching and well shot and all of that. I just didn't think, I think the investigation is pretty interesting, but I haven't yet got to know the characters so well, like the characters for whom this mystery will affect enough for him to be that gripped by it. But
will you watch
potentially
another episode?
Interesting. See, I thought you'd be, because I'm very, very tempted to press on with this, because you know how much I love a crime book turned into a TV series. And McLachlan is so good.
He is really good,
partly that, but then it is set in the 70s, which is again kind of my kryptonite. So, but it doesn't feel 70s because it takes place on the reservation. It always feels slightly out of time and out of place.
Yeah.
But I really like that, and I like the fact that, and it was strange to do it in this week that we've also reviewed Reservation Dogs, that it takes place in this maybe underrepresented part of America.
I've gone from not watching any Native American
to watching all of them.
It's a bit like when I went through my Aussie comedy flex, and now I feel like and I'm on board.
And you've got Killers of the Flower Moon.
That's right. I'm watching that later on today.
Yeah, I'm sure it's set in a similar.
It's gonna be quite the.
I tell you what's weird about this is the exec producers, George R. R. Martin.
I know.
And Robert Redford.
I know.
That's also just weird. Like you wouldn't bring those two people together to create.
When this started, it said at the front, it's brought to you by Robert Redford and George R. R. Martin. I was like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, exactly. Neither of whom, as far as I'm aware, are Native American.
No, I'm reasonably certain not. It's just yet another thing that George R. R. Martin is doing instead of finishing the Song of Ice and Fire series. Thank you, George.
Infuriated by any news involving George R. R. Martin, which isn't that he's finished writing this fucking book.
Okay, great. Well, Dark Winds then. See, I should have said Boyd's. Did this give you a dark wind? Did you have a dark wind?
No, I'll talk about bodily functions.
Yeah. I don't need to talk about Boyd's dark wind.
No.
Right. Okay, so this airs on Alibi when, Boydie?
Alibi. Alibi, as I like to call it.
Alibi. This airs on Alibi.
Alibi, Wednesday.
I like it when you get silly.
18th of October. Alibi comes from, do you know where that comes from? A Rowan Atkinson sketch where he mispronounces loads of words, and that's one of the words. I think it was on Not the 9 O'Clock News. I'm so sorry. It's an up-to-date reference for the kids.
Hot Alibi. Finger on the button.
Finger on the button, but that is where that comes from. It's not just totally random, honestly. There you go. Anyway, Wednesday, Alibi.
Alibi. Next up.
Oh, what a deep breath.
Deep breath.
It's Breeders. It's Breeders. Okay. We're going to talk Breeders. But for the sake of peace, I am going to pass Breeders over to our Breeders correspondent, Kay, who is going to talk about the show as a neutral, uninterested party.
Not uninterested.
Not uninterested in that you do not have skin in the game.
I'm not
in that you are not
out.
Whoring yourself out to Breeders like Boyd. nor are you a famous Breeder skeptic like myself.
Yeah,
you are
a
neutral. You are the Switzerland of Breeders reviewers.
Might be possibly the nicest thing he's ever.
Yes, sweet as chocolate is what I'm saying, obviously.
Okay, so when we find them, so Ali, played by Daisy Haggard, and Paul, Martin Freeman, they're still split up, and Paul continues to be a gigantic bellend, snarky, short-tempered, just a massive pain in the arse.
Yep.
However, interestingly, once they've decided to work towards making the split more permanent, they got on better and almost like sort of rediscover the things that they loved about each other. So that's an interesting dynamic that they explore. It's set at Christmas, and so their parents are all coming over. Oh my God, Joanna Bacon is on fantastic form. I love her. I always have throughout the series. And she continues to muse as Jackie. In this episode in particular, she is horrified that honey comes out of bees' bum holes.
That did make me laugh.
Honestly, she's a genius. And Alan Armstrong is there as Jim, also great. Plus, Christmas-hating Leah, played by Stella Gonnett, is there. And she has split up with Alex, played by Hugh Quashie. I'm not going to ruin it, but let's just say they have Christmas dinner together.
They do.
And Luke drops a bombshell.
Mm.
And, you know, then it's all about how they're going to deal with it. I just love this show, right, because of the realism of it, the whole situation, right? It's like you don't ever feel, for me, I don't ever feel like I'm watching a drama. It feels like I'm intruding on a relationship, one that is, you know, obviously we're witnessing them at their lowest points, doing and saying things that are lamentable but happen everywhere across the country. And then we see how they come back from that and how they work through their issues and they're trying to overcome them. And sometimes that's not possible, and the best way is for them to go their separate ways. So yeah, I just continue to love this show, and I, you know, that's all I have to say about it for now, because I feel nervous about what's to come.
No, that's all fine. That's all fine, Boydie.
Yeah, it's slightly weird that it starts at Christmas, obviously, because, you know, it's October, and you almost feel like, oh, was it meant to be to start, you know, just meant to be scheduled around Christmas time? Was that?
Because it's all aired in the States.
It's all aired in the States, that's true.
So it would have aired in the middle of summer, pretty much.
Yeah, even weirder for them, exactly, yeah. But, go on.
Question, why did the US get it for us?
It's a good question.
Actually, it's a co-production, I think, with Showtime, I think, in America.
And yeah, but why didn't we get it first and they get it second?
Yeah, Boydie, why?
I think it's just they
mouthpiece of Breeders. Tell us.
It happens all the time, because in America, if both outlets can show it when they want, within reason. And I think, probably, I don't know this for sure, but Sky likes to have everything available, all episodes of every series they show available as a box set. Whereas I imagine it went out weekly in America on Showtime.
Oh, right.
So they've probably waited, what, 10 weeks, 10 episodes, roughly, maybe a bit more time, so that it's all ready to watch in one go for British audiences. That Sky's thing is definitely to have everything available in one go.
Okay,
as much as they
sorry, continue.
Can. Thank you. No, it's a valid question. but it's a great start for the new series. And it's just a reminder that this is a beautifully well-observed depiction of family life, of relationships. I think the midlife long-term marriage analysis is brilliant. As you pointed out, you know, they kind of, these two, Martin Freeman, Daisy Hazard's characters, went through a lot last time around. And he got, you know, kind of interested and flirted with that character played by Sarah Phillips. And Daisy was kind of aware of it. And, you know, they deal with that in this episode. So it sticks with by the flashback format. So it's got slightly newcomers mind. I always think it's bold because they don't announce the dates. They don't flash on screen, you know, like 5 years previous, 5 years later, anything like that. You just have to work it out.
That can be a bit discombobulating,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, but I think it's confident. You know, I like that confidence that they know people get a hang of the storytelling, which flits around in time. So, you know, ostensibly this is set roughly 5 years after we last saw them, and, you know, Luke's 18 and, you know, his sister's, what, 15, 16 now. And but you have flashbacks to just a bit earlier.
I got properly thrown by that. I did not know what was happening.
Yeah, but it's always Mick done that. But it feels, because they are older now, it just feels slightly more confusing, maybe.
Mm.
But I think I love the structure, if you like, because you find out stuff that fills in details, if you like, of relationships and what's been happening in a quite a subtle, clever way. So it's not just kind of laid out before you with kind of clunky exposition. You just find stuff out, particularly, so for example, in that central relationship. I just think like that, so even getting into what it says about parenthood, which sparked the whole original controversy, if you like. I just think the depiction of this marriage is fantastic. Yeah. You can sense why the banter between them, you know, he's a funny guy, she's a funny woman, you know, and the way they both are funny with each other and the shared references. They have a spark, but also they have the shared references, the shared sense of humour is so key. And that is just beautifully written and performed by the two of them. I mean, absolutely brilliant, Freeman and Haggard together. And then on top of that, you've got all the parenting issues. And yes, you have got his, you know, traditional anger issues, which start right from that very first episode, probably the very first line of the whole show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I think, doesn't the first episode begin with him going into a room and screaming at his children?
Well, I've never... Yeah.
Let's not.
Yeah. So he's, you know, he's had his ups and downs with the levels of, but he's you're absolutely aware that he has his issues, his anger management issues, which are always there percolating. And he's trying to kind of, his whole performance is like, I'm trying to keep a hold of this stuff that's mm-hmm. within yeah. me and trying not to let it all, you know, go over the top and go out.
His micro expression acting, yeah. it has to be said, it's is outstanding.
Phenomenal.
Because you see him wrestling yeah. with the rage and exactly. just trying to tamp it down.
Exactly. You also now have, so you've got new cast members. Luke is now played by Oscar Kennedy, who was in Latitude. You recognise him. He's quite. He's done a lot of stuff on TV. And Ava, played by Zoe Athena. So with them, he's got the bombshell, which we're not spoiling, which is brilliantly funny. And I think, you know, Marty Freeman's reaction to that is just
that's,
so...
That's yeah. really when you see him yeah. trying to simp, like, yeah. keep so, his
because he can't help
check.
Himself. Yeah, but you know yeah, yeah. what? Do you know what? Every day of my life, I meet people like this, who can't quite help themselves.
Yeah.
And it's whether it's passive aggression or outright aggression, there's always something that they're not happy about. And it's brilliant stuff about that kind of person, I think. And the dinner and the Christmas dinner setting and the revelation from Luke of his news is so fantastic. It's funny.
I think it speaks to a lot of parents, don't you yeah. think, who are trying to like be of accepting of their children's yeah. choices while also thinking, what the yeah. fuck?
And then you've got his sister. And I always think that the secret kind of key to Breeders is the younger sister, Ava, who was always, her issue has been a lot just being in the shadow of mm-hmm. her, because her brother's been the one that's had problems and issues that are kind of most to the fore, if you like. A lot, you know, he's the one who kind of, you know, punched his dad famously at the end of season two. She's always been not in the shadows of the show, but a character who feels she's in the shadow, and she's now expressing that openly and to the fore in this season. She's got a really good storyline involving her, you know, life, and that which is beautifully dope. I've now watched most of the whole series, to be fair, because I am hosting the Q&A next week, and I just it's just up there for me with really top notch TV, comedy, drama, whatever you want to call it. I think it is ostensibly comedy with a lot of dramatic things going on, but essentially it's a comedy, the genre of this show. It's trying to be funny all the way through. You think it's what?
Comedy drama.
Yeah, I don't think so. I consider comedy drama, it's pointless discussion in a way, but maybe interesting to some people. Like, classic comedy drama is Cold Feet for me, right? That was an hour long show. It's partly the duration.
I'd have almost in my head called that a comedy. No, I'd have called it a comedy.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So yeah. for me, I always think, whenever someone says comedy drama, I genuinely always think of like Cold Feet, something like that. A kind of hour-long format show built around characters that are quite amusing and stuff that goes on in these, but it's not really trying to be that funny. That's not its raison d'etre.
Yeah, but it has serious dramatic kind of,
yeah.
like what's-her-face dying in a car crash, but it also has like absurdity, which like Adam with a rose up his bum. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it has
comedic elements. Adam with a rose up his bum is probably like that doesn't happen in this show. This show is kind of remarkably realistic and believable, but it's still the characters and the way they interact and the way they and those reaction shots are really, really funny.
Yeah,
all the way through.
I mean, the bee's bumhole thing, yeah. classic example. Exactly. That's just funny.
I don't think you're going to get exactly. So that's a very good example. Thank you. Of how and that is comedy. This is a comedy, and it's got very dramatic moments, very moving moments. Very like you had stuff in the last series with the parents, Jim and Jackie, played by Alan Armstrong. And as you say, Joanna Bacon, who is legendary.
Oh, God,
and I've said
her.
Before, is so much like Russell Tovey's mum. It's
oh,
astonishing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
they had a really scarily dramatic episode in the last, which I thought was one of the best episodes ever, because it was so, I mean, about his alleged infidelity or not. And that was so well done. So when it does...
This was with Sally Phillips, wasn't it?
Well, that was his infidelity issue.
Yeah.
But no, there was his dad had.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah, his dad had an infidelity storyline as
oh,
well.
Oh, I thought you were talking about his health scare.
No, I'm Robbie talking about Ava. The infidelity scene. With the mum, and they're out, you know. Mm. Anyway, all of this is a long-winded way of saying it's fucking brilliant. And it has been really, really good from the start. I think it's got...
I don't think I don't see that passive aggression.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'll say this, though. I will say this. I liked it from the start, and I didn't have the issues you had. And I understand your issues with that. But I do think it's got better and better and better. And it's now, like, just one of the best things.
I know Terry agrees with you very much.
Yeah,
now.
She
like,
really
yeah,
did.
Yeah, like, didn't like it at first, but yeah. now really, really yeah. thinks it's great.
I think it's yeah. gone from being a really good show to being a fucking excellent show.
I mean, it's brilliantly acted. It's extremely well... written and conceived. And I think at this point, there's nothing in it to bother me because it's more a relationship show at this point. Don't get me wrong, the parenting stuff is a part of it, but their kids are kind of grown up, so it's a different type of show than it was before anyway. But it's all of the things you say. Like, it's incredibly realistic, sometimes too realistic. But it's great. Great performances. I don't have really anything negative say about this one, except for the fact that I was quite confused at points, because obviously I'm jumping in now at the fourth season, and the time jumps in it I thought were a little jarring. That my one note on this was, like, they're not signposted, they're not, to my mind, organic. And maybe if I knew the series better and I knew the timeline better, it wouldn't have confused me. But I genuinely, I thought there was something wrong with the screener. Because I was just like, I thought they genuinely put the scenes out of order. Because I'm like, this doesn't make any sense at all. We've just gone from this to this. That's not a scene transition. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe if you watched it all the way through and they've been doing that all the way through, that's fine. And that's the grammar of the show. But for me, I was like, what is this?
Yeah, that is the grammar of the show. I do admit, though, it was extra confusing to start with. I think you just have to go with the flow of it, really.
Because there's no visual indicator that it's a different period of time.
Well, they're wearing different clothes.
But genuinely, there's one bit where a scene ends, like they're in a bar and a scene ends, and then the next scene was where they would be wearing different clothes, a different day, and you're just like, what? Because it's a totally different
Because also the time jump, the flashbacks, if you like, are of similar themes. So it's a flashback to another Christmas day rather than the Christmas day, which is taking place in the present day.
It's very confusing.
Oh my God, when they were doing the tree.
But that's the thing,
I know. And I was like, is it doing the thing where they do the presents before the dinner? Like, is this just how they do Christmas and they just have different people over for different parts of the day?
The one thing that really struck me was the new actor, Elsa Kennedy, playing the son, playing Luke, is very different to the previous Luke. So different. Because the previous Luke was very kind of, was neurotic and, you know, kind of... But then again, it's when they fill in the details of how he's grown and he's got, you know, he's got a girlfriend now and all of that. We can say that much. That it makes sense. Initially, I was jarred by that. I thought that was jarring. But then it all kind of all starts to make sense as it goes on, interestingly. And the whole anger of the father issue is also intriguingly explored when it comes to Luke's character as it goes on, without wanting to spoil it at all.
Okay, super. Yes. Well, that is Breeders, and that is on the Sky and the Now.
Yes, Sky Max. No, Sky Comedy. Sky Comedy.
Oh, there you go. See, it is a comedy. Yeah. You know that because it's on comedy.
Exactly. Further final proof, if it ever be needed, that it's not Sky Comedy Drama, it's Sky Comedy. And it's on Friday, the 20th of October, 10 p.m, with a double bill, but it will also be all available as a box, I believe, that same day.
Fabulous. Finally this week, we have Bodies. And Bodies is on the Netflix, and it is based on the DC comic / graphic novel of the same name, written by Cy Spencer. And this one is created for Netflix by Paul Tomlin, and it is a murder mystery, except, let's say, a slightly unconventional one, because the body doesn't just turn up in a London street. It turns up in a London street in 2023, and at two periods in the past, and one period in the future. This also deserves props for being the first TV show that I have seen that features the hated London transport phrase, see it, say it, sort it, which I was like, wow, you actually kept that in the show. But right, Boydies, what did you think of Bodies?
Well, it's a lot to take in. This is quite... talking of the confusing time jumps in Breeders, this is deliberately, disconcertingly... set in all lots of different time periods. So it begins in the present day, as far as I can remember. I've watched this a long time ago now. I watched it about weeks ago. 2023. Thanks for confirming that's the present day.
Well, I don't know with you sometimes.
I don't know what that means. It begins in the present day when DS Shahara Hassan, played by Amaka Okafor, investigates when a naked man, the corpse of a naked man, is discovered in an East End street. And there's a young man who's kind of flees the scene. He seems to be a witness or he's involved, who knows? And she starts to investigate. Then we cut to 1941, where a D.S. Charles Whiteman, played by Jacob Fortune Lloyd, who is a Jewish detective in the middle of the war, and he's kind of getting phone calls. You think he's maybe a bit dodgy?
He's a bent copper.
He's a bent copper, and he's getting phone calls from this woman who's telling him, ordering him to do stuff he thinks probably criminal or illegal in some way. Criminal, as opposed to illegal. Big difference.
I mean, she does ask him to remove a body, so...
Oh, yeah, she does. Thank you. There we go.
But there's something more to it than that.
Yes, there is something
going on. There's something going on.
There's a key phrase, know you were loved.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But he's also investigated what seems to be the same naked corpse, dead body in the same London street in the East End. And then it cuts to the 1890s, where Carl Soller's character, D.I. Alfred Hillinghead, has the same body, because the same thing. And this time there's a witness who's like a journalist slash photographer who kind of invites him back to his place.
There's a frisson.
There's a frisson going on there. And remember, it is the 1890s though, so, you know, that kind of thing wasn't encouraged. Man-on-man action. Then we go to 2053, in the future, where D.S. Iris Maplewood, played by Shira Haas, is also investigating. But at this point, it's the future, and there's like floating people's heads running around. And Stephen Graham's character, he pops up first of all in like the window of the investigation in the 19th century in like a photograph that the photojournalist took. But then he's like visible as some kind of like politician or something in the future.
He's like a hologram.
He's like a hologram. Like, yeah. He's famous in some way, shape or form. We don't know how to start with in the first couple of episodes. But his character is called Elias Mannix. And as it goes on, I think I've watched three episodes, it becomes clear that he is the key to what the fuck is going on with all these corpses being found in the same East End street in all these different time zones with lots of detectives trying to solve the same crime effectively across all the different times. It's very interesting. It's very Netflixy in the way it's shot.
Explain that.
Gourmet burger.
Yeah, it's like gourmet burger. It's not as kind of, so if you think of Apple, visually, Apple being the, you know, kind of like very sparkly, slick kind of quality.
Yeah, Apple has a cool sheen
cool,
to it.
That's it.
Whereas Netflix has a warmth to the way they shoot things.
Mm. Yeah, so this is more on the Netflix thing, but looks great, but in a different way to the Apple shit, but it has got that Netflixy quality to it. But I was gripped. I was much more, if you think of, you know, going back to the psychological thriller thing again, this is a psychological thriller slash whodunit slash sci-fi discombobulating time travel thing. And it's absolutely fascinating, and I really want to know where the fuck it's going to go.
Yeah. Kyle Zoller, Cyril Khan from Andor.
Yes, and you've been very excited about that.
I was excited.
Of course you are.
Now, this struck me as the kind of show that, first of all, I almost want to see what Steph would think of this, because it would blow her mind from a murder mystery persuasion.
Yeah.
But this, I couldn't work out whether Kay would find this fascinating or infuriating or a mixture of the two. Where did you land?
I really enjoyed this.
Wow.
Yes, I really enjoyed... So when I was watching it, I didn't realise it was going to skip forward to the future, though, right? So I was like, God, this is really up my street.
So just to be clear, time travel's fine as long as it's in the past.
Yeah, I don't want any futuristic shit, right? So anyway, so I was watching, I was like, God, this is great. Like, really intriguing, really enthralled by each sort of period and each detective trying to, you know, like, solve the crime, because obviously it's just not just about the crime, it's like how the body's found, what happened, and about the detectives themselves. So I was just loving life, thinking this is going to be my new show to get really into. And then, as you say, it skips forward to 2053. And at that point, it was so funny. I was like, I had this reaction to it. I was like, what?
Ugh, disgusting.
But then I pulled myself up and I was like, stop being a dick, because you enjoyed it up until this point. Go with it. And actually, it didn't repel me as I thought it would. I just saw it as part of, like, it's just another sort of period of time where, you know, the same thing's happening, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah. I just really, really enjoy this. I can't wait to see where it goes.
Mm. It's properly like noodle baking, isn't it? Where you're just like, I must find out how this mystery ends, because I'm really on board with it.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different aspects to it, and all of them are kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it.
I will give a little warning though. There is there's an autopsy scene which is quite graphic.
Oh yeah, that's quite
If you're eating,
it's a bit cock and balls.
I mean, well, No.
Oh, you're the brain.
Oh, you mean the bit where he peels the skin off the guy's skull?
Yeah, the penis is fine. It's more the scooping out of the brain.
The penis is fine. Can I say, that's confirmed.
That is the quote from this week's episode. Kay Ribeiro, the penis is fine.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like, you know. But, I mean, the kind of
the brain was...
The brain,
yeah, that was a lot.
Scalped.
That was a lot.
They're trying to find the bullet. There's a mystery bullet. It seems to have been shot in the head, but there's no bullet.
So he's wading around inside this guy's brain.
And they're not fucking about.
No, they're not.
They're digging deep into the skull.
Yeah. Props to the guy who plays the dead body, whose entire job is just to be tackle out all the way through the show. So, you know, props.
Huge props to him.
Yeah. But really good. Great cast of people. Really enjoyed it. I mean, Stephen Graham, obviously brilliant everything. Jacob Fortune Lloyd was a really fascinating character. I really liked his.
He gets lots of anti-Semitic bigotry
from
his colleagues, which is interesting.
Yeah, that
that's something you don't see dramatised that often.
No. And Amaka Okafor obviously plays a Muslim police officer.
Oh, I really liked her.
You know, she's very conflicted because they use the fact that she's Muslim to kind of get her to try and sort of like get information out of people within her community. So it's, you know, that's a really interesting storyline. But yeah, it's a genuinely really fascinating kind of original show. I mean, original in that I've not seen anything like it. Not original in that it's literally based on pre-existing material. But yeah, good stuff. Bodies then on the Netflix, all in one go. Boydie, when does it drop?
Thursday.
On the Thursday.
Yeah.
On the Thursday. Right. What else is out this week? Quite a few little things, as I recall.
Yes. Sorry, I'm flicking through.
Burning Girls comes to Paramount Plus, which is Samantha Morton and Ruby Stokes. That is embargo. We'll be covering that on Pilot Plus this week.
He's literally answering his own question.
I know. I like to ask an answer. More important than any of that, though, Bosch Legacy, come on, comes back to Freevee season two. Going to find out what happens with the cliffhanger at the end of season one. That's very, very exciting indeed. We didn't review that on this week's podcast, partly because I didn't get screeners for it, but also because I wanted to spare Boyd and Kay from me talking about Bosch for 45 minutes.
Bosch. That wouldn't have been a bad thing.
But it is like the second season and like the eighth season of all Bosch.
Don't you come at the Bosch.
God, come at the
what
Bosch.
Else is there, Boyd?
Colleen Rooney on Disney Plus.
Oh, wow, I do know.
Hey, I've got my finger on the pulse.
I'm shocked. Yes,
that's when
James.
You think he can't surprise you.
Colleen there Rooney, you go. The real Wagatha story, which James is all over, is on Disney Plus.
That was a big
Wednesday.
Cultural moment, James.
Yeah, huge cultural moment.
It was. That's on Wednesday.
Yeah, going to BAFTA screening of that on Monday. Very exciting.
Rick and Morty season 7 comes to E4 on Monday today.
Yeah, animated.
That's right.
Yeah. Elite, the Spanish teen, raunchy Spanish teens are back on Friday.
Like that, don't you?
Very good. Very absolutely ludicrous.
Boyd loves a raunchy Spanish teen.
Preposterous Elite is steady. Oh my God. But it's very funny, very entertaining.
He's giggling like a naughty schoolboy.
He's been really pleased with himself there.
Was just referring to Warrior Nun. It's all good.
Oh, God. This thing called Neon on Netflix on Thursday, which is a comedy set in the reggaeton world. Don't know much more about that. The Ex-Wife, which I think we reviewed on this very podcast because it was on Paramount Plus, that comes to Channel 5.
Channel number 5.
Channel number 5, exactly. The Wonder Years new series, that's going on Disney Plus.
Oh, God.
I'm steady. And Upload. Do you remember Upload?
I do.
That's still going.
Yeah.
How is that still going? I have to say, I'm surprised. But some people really like it. So there you go. I think that might be it.
Look at the back of the mag. I just realised. Nice big plug there in an advert for Pilot TV podcast.
Hooray.
Yeah.
Pick of the week.
Breeders.
I might go Bodies, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. I do love Breeders, but I just felt like that was, you know, it felt original.
I will also go Bodies.
Mm. I mean, no great surprise. No, but you did like it. It was good that you enjoyed Breeders.
Thank you. That's it for this week's show. If you enjoyed it, please do head over to the Apple Store of your choice, steal one of their display items and leave us a 5 Breeders rating. That would be great. Do follow us on social media at James C. Dyer, at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Ribeiro and at Pilot TV Pod. Next week... On next week's show, I don't know what we're going to be doing, but let's see what is actually happening. Fear the Walking Dead returns for the second half of its 8th and final season. Do we care about that?
Where are you getting all this info from?
I'm getting all this. It's funny you should say that, Kay. It's funny you should say that. I'm getting it from the shared calendar that I lovingly curate and update for you both every single week and which you randomly ignore. So that's all good.
White noise now.
What We Do in the Shadows is back for another season next week as well. The Enfield Poltergeist comes to Apple. That's a documentary on, the Enfield Poltergeist. And Fellow Travellers with Matt Bomer comes to Paramount Plus as well. And there's probably other things that I've forgotten, which aren't on the calendar because Boydy hasn't put them in there. But, you know, we'll tackle that when it comes up.
Yeah, we should have done probably Lenny Henry's Sweet Little Birds, which is actually on Sunday.
Is that this week?
Yeah, but I didn't know it was going to be on the Sunday. But I had to pick, I was forced to pick.
Boydy.
Cover that. We'll review that.
Yeah,
even
we
though
should do that.
We'll come out one day after it comes out.
But clearly should have done that over Breeders.
Shut up.
Yes, you've got to get one last dig in.
There we go. We survived it, guys. We survived talking about Breeders.
Yeah.
Oh, this has been exciting. Right, we're done. We're off. I've got a 3.5-hour film to watch. Pilot out.